Welcome, everybody, to the inaugural episode of Hollywood's Burning. I'm your host, Riley Keenan. With me, as always, we have Liam McDonald and Adam Hosteller. How you boys doing?
I'm doing good. This is Liam McDonald for all those listening out there. How about you, Adam? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little chilly, a little cold, but that might work because Hollywood is also cold. It's a very cold demeanor, a lot of the producers out there, and that's kind of what this show is about. We'll be talking about, you know, movies, television, just anything in the Hollywood industry, and kind of the trends within that. One of them that we'll be talking about today is the whole massive trend of superhero movies, particularly Marvel. And then also within that, not necessarily today, but going on in the future, what the future of Hollywood is, how they will interact with social media, what's going on with that. So, yeah, looking forward to starting this out. And yeah, it's going
to
be fun.
Absolutely happy to be here. We're actually currently filming this in an attic. That's why it's a little chilly right now. But, yeah, let's break right into it. And this whole conversation kind of started a year and a bit ago when Martin Scorsese, as we all know, one of the greatest directors, one of the greatest living directors, he came out and said that Marvel isn't cinema. And he talked about how, you know, it doesn't really tie into the human beings, you know, trying to convey emotional, psychological experiences to one another. Where do you guys, like, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, personally, I'm going to have to, I want to agree, but it's not because it's Scorsese and he's one of the greats. Like, obviously, you have to take his opinion as, like,
with a grain of salt. I think it's tough, though, because, like, he's at such a high level. It's almost like Michael Jordan just being like, you know, basketball just isn't the same. It's like, yeah, well, you know, not everybody can be Michael Jordan.
I would say it's almost more like Bill Russell saying that, because Martin Scorsese's getting up there in age.
He absolutely is, but he's still his product.
No, he's still spry and, like, he's smart and everything, mm-hmm. but he is, like, he's a product of another age.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense that he would say this is a roller coaster ride, because compared to what he was growing up with, this is like if you showed this to somebody in the 70s, if you were to show them like Endgame,
yeah,
they would be terrified.
Yeah, they wouldn't fully understand it.
Well, like I said before, try to compare the role of Thor by Chris Hemsworth to like Hannibal or Sons of the Lambs with Anthony Hopkins. Like, you can't.
Mm-hmm. It's just not on the same level
between the two.
Yeah, yeah. And people will bring up, you know, The Dark Knight and Heath Ledger winning Best Supporting Actor, but that is DC. And although DC hasn't done a great job over the years of making, you know, congruent film and having a plan and all, they do have pretty solid writing from time to time, and they go into a bit more darker themes, whereas Marvel's a lot more colorful. You don't really see actors really getting passionate about it. So that's why when Thanos kind of came into the fold, it felt different. It felt new that there was really something on the line here. But one thing I wanted to relay was, I don't think Martin is saying this negatively. I don't think he means it as Marvel's bad. I think he says he enjoys Marvel and he understands why it's popular, but it's just not cinema. And I think what he means by that is, like, what he makes is film. What he makes, you know, he has this, you know, tough storylines that have a, you know, you really never know where it's going to go, whereas Marvel's a lot more formulaic. You know, there's going to be a big final battle. The characters all have the same kind of sense of humor, whether it's Thor, Hulk, whoever, and it's like that spry humor, whereas, you know, not everybody's that witty. You know, Captain America, I can't imagine he's a very, you know, hard-nosed guy. I can't imagine he's cracking jokes all the time. So I think it is important to note that he's not saying they're bad, but it's just not cinema.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an important thing to note. I would perhaps go one step further than Marty. They are quality movies. They're good movies. I would say that there's a real argument that they are they cause more harm than good.
I agree.
Both to the film industry and then also to society as a whole.
Yeah.
There's something nice about having something that a bunch of people watch that you can talk to about. But when it gets to be, how many do they have now? 30
something?
It's
gotta be, it's 20.
It's brutal.
It's when up it, at like 28, 29.
When it gets to be like, okay, I'm going to see my third new Marvel movie of the year, and I've seen 4 TV shows this year. You kind of start to notice patterns, and you start to notice, I don't know, say, oh, this thing's like maybe getting a little boring. Oh, they'll do a callback to another character that draws you in. So it's really smart because they have a huge library of characters that you already know that they can pull in to like give you a little, I guess, nostalgia boost from like 10 years ago or whatever. But it is, it makes it a lot easier to not have to rely on your writing.
Absolutely.
If you have these characters that you know well, we can put Iron Man and Captain America in a movie, and if they put that out tomorrow, it would probably break whatever records Marvel set.
Yeah.
Whether or not the story's good. And luckily with Marvel, usually the story's like at least adequate. A lot of times, yeah. Great.
There are a lot of great directors and writers in Marvel. It's just very hard to kind of push the boundaries when it is for family and it is for kids at the end of the day.
It's hard to separate yourself from the other movies,
yeah,
too.
It's tough.
Each director. Like, they kind of get stuck in a box with what they can do.
Yeah. That's why I think Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther get such high praise because, you know, the soundtracks are very different. The comedy is different. There's a lot, you know, more important themes and more gripping themes in those movies where it feels like there's more on the line. But I feel like Spider-Man, the new No Way Home movie, is the perfect example. And I guess spoilers for anybody that hasn't seen it.
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler.
But yeah, basically, that movie was a nostalgia trip. And at the end of the day, it is fan service. And I do love that movie so much. I think it's a top 3, maybe top 5 Marvel movie, or at least MCU movie. But it was fan service. You know, you're bringing old Spider-Man back, you're bringing old villains back. That's going to get people, you know, that stopped watching Marvel to come back and be like, oh, and a little nostalgia trip. And kids now to be like, oh, this is so exciting to see all these people in one place. It is great, but the writing doesn't have to speak for itself. You know, you can kind of just put all these guys
having
on the screen together.
Having three Spider-Mans is the selling point of the movie.
Absolutely, yeah. And people didn't even, like, there was no guarantee that was happening, but everyone knew it was going to happen. And that's the thing with Marvel. You can predict a lot of what's going on, and I think that's what made Infinity War so great. Is it was unpredictable. They actually lost. Like, from the beginning to end, they lost. And I thought that, if anything, that would get an Oscar nomination, whereas instead it went to Black Panther, which I didn't fully understand.
I didn't agree with the Black Panther over Infinity War, but I also think that Scorsese was looking at it in that light too, where you talk about what were you just saying, sorry?
About Martin or
yeah, about Martin.
Just how, you know, I don't think he was looking upon it negatively. It was more so just him saying it is a theme park and we have to acknowledge that. Like, this isn't the best we're going to get in film.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think, like,
yeah,
just,
no,
like,
I agree.
Don't continue.
I would just I have a question. I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I would say, going off that fan service idea, the fan service in Marvel movies works a lot, particularly that Spider-Man. I think that's, like, a good example.
Yeah.
And we don't have to talk about this for too long, because it honestly could be its whole, like, a whole episode. It could be a whole series. I find that the fan service in the Star Wars sequels is pitiful. And,
it's
like,
pitiful, but
pretty
that,
like, disgust, like, gross.
It is gross, but I think that comes with the planning of it all, and
right.
it was horribly written.
So you think the fan service in Marvel, it does feel like they put a lot more thought into it.
Absolutely, you know, they're thinking about it in advance,
right?
Like, they're thinking five years down the road with a lot of this stuff. Like with Infinity War, that brought together, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor. And now 4 years later, we're seeing that, the culmination of the movie. And then a year later, they're going to get another one together. So you see that they're planning ahead, unlike DC, who kind of just seems like they're just making one movie at a time and just, but, like, let's throw everyone together.
I kind of like that, though. I like the unpredictability of DC and kind of just having stuff that surprises you. Like, for example, when me and you first saw the Batman trailer, we were like, this is sick.
Yeah.
But now it feels like a lot of the Avengers stuff I can predict, or we have predict, actually, what would be the outcome. And I think that's part of Scorsese's point, where he's like, if you can predict the outcome, it's not a film.
Exactly.
Film is supposed to, like, grab you and give you an unexpected outcome.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not necessarily, though, because when I'm watching, say, Toy Story 3, and at the end all the toys are, like, falling into the fire pit.
Oh, it's gut-wrenching.
There's never a second that I think, oh, Woody and Buzz are about to die. The whole time I'm like, well, like, they're not just going to kill Woody
and
Buzz.
They should start killing Woody.
But, like, yeah, it would be interesting, but, like, I know the ending, but I still think that's a great movie.
Yeah.
I guess if you can predict the ending from a trailer, which a lot of these you maybe could do, that's when it starts to get
that's the thing.
Little,
like,
dicey.
I want to go off Adam's point here and kind of agree with him to say, yeah, that was predictable and you never thought about that, but look at the type of movie it is. It's an amusement park movie.
Absolutely.
It's a children's movie, and that's why it's predictable. You're just, like,
I don't know. I would say Toy Story 3 in a lot of ways is less predictable than some Marvel movies, but then also the point that I brought up is, like, at the climax of the movie, so it's not as if you're predicting from the very get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, like, I don't necessarily think, like, Toy Story is the best example to compare to Marvel, obviously, because
it's not.
It is family.
It's not the same, for sure.
But it's very tough when you think of the grand scheme of things. Because it's like, yeah, these are the biggest movies in the world, and they're going to draw a lot of box office numbers, and it takes away from the true cinema that we know. You know, there's movies in the last couple of years like The Lighthouse, and, you know, like something like Taxi Driver, which was in a 1976 film, Martin Scorsese, that wouldn't do well today. Even though that is one of the greatest movies that's ever been made, it would not do well today because audiences, first of all, wouldn't go out and see it. They just aren't drawn by the trailer because today's audiences, they want explosions, they want CGI. And I think that's kind of ties into how Hollywood is burning in a sense. But it creates a lot more opportunity. But at the end of the day, like, you really, I can't compare a Taxi Driver to a, you know, a Marvel movie.
See, I want to agree with you and say that, like, a Taxi Driver movie couldn't be popular now. But I strongly disagree with that because, like, there are so many, like, new forms of, like, alternative movies that are coming out that are actually really popular and are, like, kind of like follow the lines of, like, cult classics that are getting put out now.
Yeah.
And when I go along the lines of that, I'm talking about, like, look at Eraserhead or, like, The Disaster, or not Disaster Artist, The Room, what Disaster Artist is based off of. But it's two movies that, like, they're not good movies, but, like, there's a, they have a cult, like, a niche following, yeah, of, like, a large amount of people that love it.
Mm-hmm. But that's not the same as a Marvel movie.
No,
Marvel movie is, like, if Taxi Driver were to come out, maybe it would develop a cult following.
It would, yeah, that's
but it would
thing.
Be, it wouldn't make $1 billion.
That's the thing, though.
It would have a cult following.
Yeah, it would have a cult following, but that's exactly Marvel, the point. It's not going to be popularized. Back in the day, Taxi Driver, people would look at that as, like, that's going to be Oscar nominated. Robert De Niro is one of the best performances of the year. Today, it would be, you know, like, if you saw the movie, you would like it. But in today's age, also, it's a much slower movie, and in today's audiences, we are not used to slow movies, and people really hate on that. Like, there's a lot of great film out there. You know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Birdman, we've watched recently. Long movies with unbelievable themes that are very unique. The normal viewer could not sit through that. You know, with the music, a fault in action, with, you know, it seems like the viewers of today need, you know, that grit and grind of just people bashing heads. It's like, sometimes it's just, I want a Quentin Tarantino scene where it's just dialogue for 20 minutes.
I would say, the general movie-going populace prefers something where they can kind of just shut their brain off and escape.
Yeah.
But with streaming now, it seems like, I think movie theaters are dying as well.
They absolutely
which is
are.
Another aspect of Hollywood burning. It wouldn't surprise me if within, like, 10 years, movie theaters essentially just become... They really already are. It's a place to see Disney movies and, like, a reboot of something, I guess.
Yeah. Or when you're really looking for something to do, and you're like, a movie will make me feel like I'm doing something.
Right, but I think people are just going to go more to streaming. Because if you could... Like, you can pay nothing and have some friends over and watch something, or you can shell out a bunch of money. And also, there's already... I think it was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm kind of going on a tangent, but Tarantino, he's obsessed with, like, real film, and he likes the analog stuff. And he had a deal with, like, a small little theater in L.A., I think, where they were going to show his film on, like, 5mm film. And, like, he's a nerd about all this stuff, and he's excited. And then Disney approached that film theater and said, hey, like, our new Star Wars is coming out, like, 2 weeks after Tarantino's movie, so we're going to need, like, all of your screens to show our movie. And they said, oh, sorry, we can't. Like, we made a deal with Quentin, so we can't do that. And then Disney said, well, if you don't do that, then we just won't show it at any of your theaters. And so they had, like, that's where they make a bunch of their money is Star Wars. So when you have this big company like Disney who runs Marvel and Star Wars and
no, they run Hollywood.
Well, that's what I was getting to is that they essentially do. And when you have that much power and you can say, hey, movie theater, if you don't show only our stuff, we'll shut you down. Like, they can do that.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of time. It messes up the industry, though. That's why it's
it absolutely does. And then the you brought it up earlier, the oversaturation of content too. They're bringing out 4 movies a year with multiple TV shows. And if it's all planned out and it's all in one universe, the normal viewer cannot continue to catch up with all that viewing.
But they
we haven't even watched the shows, and we're huge fans.
But they're not making it for the normal viewer.
They're making it for the diehard fan.
That's
exactly the point. Is like if you're only going towards one audience, and it's, you know, the comic book viewer that's going to be incredibly excited. If I walk into Iron Man 1, and I've never seen a single superhero movie, read a book. You go into that movie and you go, oh, I understand what this is. That's a great story. Whereas you go farther down the line now, it's like you need to see everything prior to it to fully grasp it. And I think that's where it kind of struggles. And I kind of think of the same thing with almost like the Star Wars prequels. Like, people talk about like the greatness and how much there's foreshadowing and all this stuff, but it's like you need to see the originals to then watch the prequels to see where it ties back. And it has the advantage of having a prior. Whereas I see the same thing with Marvel. These characters are riddled in comics for years. It doesn't take a lot for the writers. They don't go into the, you know, the psychological aspect of the characters. They go about, okay, what can they do next? And they have it all in front of them. So there isn't a unique take often. Yeah. That's why this new Batman movie is going to be incredible, because it's got an incredibly dark theme. More so than Dark Knight, even. And it looks as though, instead of his parents being great to the city, they've kind of affected it in a negative way, and it doesn't seem like he's doing anything, and he's taking his aggression out, you know, on the people of Gotham. So, in that word, I think the Batman I look at as true cinema, because it's authentic to the character, but you're also putting your own spin on it. Whereas Marvel, it seems like they're just sticking to that grain of what works, and they don't want to expand from it.
But I would say, like, more recently, they've started to expand and get a little weirder. Like, if you go from, say, Iron Man, and then, I don't know, Captain America, and then even, the first Avengers, like, those are, that kind of era is all pretty safe.
It's very cookie cutter.
They're good. Like, they were fun, because they're new, and they've got these nice effects.
Yeah.
But if you go towards the more recent stuff, like the Guardians movies, some of the stuff in, like, Infinity War and Endgame, they do like some weirdo stuff, like Thor Ragnarok 2, which is like, I think that's what they need to do, because if they keep going with the this is new superhero man and here's his backstory, or this is superhero man and this is other superhero man or woman, mm-hmm. and they have to work together as a team, we've seen that 33 times.
Yeah.
I think they go to Thor Ragnarok and they say, hey, Thor's gonna fight the Hulk, I go, oh, that's new.
Yeah.
I'll go see that.
And that's why movies like Ragnarok and Civil War are so highly rated in the MCU universe, because they tried something new. The first two Thor movies were not successful, and the second one, you could say, is possibly the worst MCU movie possible. They completely shifted it with, you know, Taika Waititi is a great writer and a great director.
And they took that whole story from a comic book.
Yeah, they took a different spin on it, and it's been incredibly successful. And you look at even Civil War, like, obviously, the Captain America movies, I think all three of them are great. It's probably the best trilogy in MCU. But Civil War really propelled it, because it wasn't Captain America just being this nice guy the whole time. It was like, there was stuff on the line. Like, he had to fight Iron Man over these Sokovia Accords, because finally we're talking about how these big battles are affecting, you know, the people that are living in these cities. It's not just like, obviously they need to save the world, but in the process of doing that, how many people are you hurting? How many buildings are you knocking down? Like, getting those true themes in there is what propels it to a better height. But, you know, when you look at the catalog as a whole, you know, you can't compare it to regular film. Well, and I think that for me, I don't think you can nominate a Marvel film for an Oscar per se. And I think that kind of,
for a best picture, like, you can nominate for effects.
Yeah, you can absolutely nominate for like cinematography, maybe. You can do acting. But that's why, like, Golden Globes, I think, does a good job, because they have multiple different genres, and that helps it out a bit. They still don't have action, which I think they should. But I think just the fact that, like, I don't think you can nominate a Marvel movie, and I don't think it can win. And that kind of almost just draws a line between cinema and non-cinema.
Of the ones that they've done now, I don't think you can really nominate one.
Yeah.
Partially because it's, like, you kind of need to have seen other ones to get the full effect of the movie.
Exactly.
Like, you can watch, say, Indiana Jones 3 without watching the other ones and be like, oh, it's Indiana Jones, he's going on an adventure.
Yeah.
If you try to watch Infinity War blind, like, with no background, you're going to get lost.
Exactly.
And you'll see, like, who's that guy with the red face on the mountain? What's he doing?
Yeah, like, at the end of the day, it is a franchise. And if you can't, I just believe, if you can't go into it blindly and come out, you know, with a positive reaction, if you come out completely confused, then it's like, what are we doing here? You know, the normal moviegoer can't understand what it is. And I'm sorry, that just doesn't cut it.
I think what may end up happening is that it could shift to where the normal moviegoer, like, will know. And, like, it is the norm to be like, well, like, Disney Plus has gotten massive. I would imagine there's millions of people watching a lot of those shows.
Yeah.
But I've certainly gotten fatigued by the whole Marvel big conglomerate. It's, yeah. I haven't seen, like, I saw the Spider-Man one. I thought it was pretty good. But before that, I mean, it's been probably years since I've seen one. And I don't plan to see, like, that. I haven't seen anything other than maybe the new Guardians that really intrigues me that much.
Right.
And I think that's just because they're putting them out so fast.
There's just too much at once.
I want to go back to what Adam said about them creating more weird content as of late. And I think when you think of weird, I don't think it is weird. I think it's more along the lines of, like, they know what is next before, like, we do. Before the consumer knows, I think that Disney will just always be making the money moves. Like, I think that they have such a control on it that whatever they do end up pumping out will become famous.
Not necessarily.
So I don't think they have to be too worried about it because of their already status. But the thing to go off that is, do you think that Disney has the potential to start making Marvel movies that could be considered as film in Martin Scorsese's eyes?
I absolutely do, but they...
I think they
it
will.
Would, it would, I think they... I don't know if they will, because I think they're scared to go outside of the box. I feel like Marvel is very... They're a company that is trying to just check all the boxes. You know, they want everyone to be happy.
Their box is money.
It is, but, like, they want everyone to be happy at the end of the day.
And the ultimate box is money, but they do really try to check, like... From, like, various aspects, like, obviously the whole, like, diversity thing, which is good. You don't want to just have a bunch of white superheroes because it gets boring and it's kind of hard to tell them apart sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
But, and then outside of that, they also want to check the box of, like, could a kid come see this and enjoy it? Could an adult come see this by himself and enjoy it? Can we sell merchandise of this? Can we sell a DVD of that? Like, there's so many boxes, but it really does all come down to, like Liam said, the box of money. Like, will this generate more money than we spent?
But that's why I think they're not concerned with the whole... That's why I think they're not concerned with the whole weird and kind of getting to, like, those more niche films. Because they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They know what everything they're going to do for, like, the next 20 years. Stan Lee probably set them up for, like, a while.
Well, yeah, they have such a massive catalog of stories that they can reach into. But, I don't know. The only thing that I would say is that they've done, like, a real... like. It's hard to say that they really could have done a better job up to this point.
Oh, they couldn't.
Oh, no, that's the thing. Let's don't get us wrong.
There is no possible way that they could have gone better, because they're the biggest industry in all of Hollywood.
Absolutely. Here's what I would say based off of that, then. What I would say is, I'm fatigued. If they couldn't have done better than this, and I'm already like, all right, I'm kind of tapping out a bit, like, it's a matter of time before other people start to, unless they say, okay, we got to go more into this kind of weird area. Because if they keep doing the same thing, no matter how many special effects or different characters you have, the movies will start to have a same feel to them.
Yeah.
Which they have.
I started getting... You're talking about getting fatigued. I actually started getting fatigued, like about the time, maybe a little bit before, of Avengers. As weird as that sounds, most people are like, that's when they're the most hyped. The first Avengers, I was starting to get a little, what is this? Like, they're adding all these people, because before we were seeing, like, starting the crossovers. I really liked the crossover period when you started to see, like, for example, like, Bucky and, like, Black Panther. I love that. When you started to see, like, the little hints of them.
Spider-Man shows up in Captain America,
I felt like
Black Panther
2. A lot more of that. Like, it should have been, like, a big, like slow rise of, like, the increase of different superheroes in different movies. Instead of just, like, it felt like it was a pretty abrupt transfer all the way over to the Avengers movies. And I don't know if that was me, but I just was, like, felt very, like...
I think they did it pretty slow. I think the first Avengers they did, I remember when it came out...
They did it really
I
well.
I said, like, this is going to be so clustered. Like, how can you have, whatever, six superheroes in a movie? And then I saw it. And I was like, oh, that, like, it didn't feel, like, clustered or, like, a big mess.
Yeah.
And then when the trailer for the Infinity War came out, I said, okay, well, that's going to be a mess. Like, you can't have 60 characters and make it make sense.
Yeah.
And then they did.
They did.
So, I don't know. I guess the next Avengers movie is just going to have, like, 1,000 superheroes in it or something, and it'll be, like, 80 hours long.
Yeah.
But it'll be good.
Yeah, and I think, like, one of the issues is that the normal Marvel fan will say, oh, I mean, you guys are getting fatigued because you're not huge Marvel fans. Well, that's exactly our point. If you have to be a huge Marvel fan to love everything that comes out, then, like, what are we doing here?
Is it really good? Like, you have to be a diehard fan to like what they produce. It's really not a competition.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback off of your point. You were saying, like, bringing, you know, cameos in a lot of movies and having people tie in together. Yeah. And that was very powerful, and it does great. But then you look at Spider-Man, where this trilogy of Tom Holland, he was kind of... he was hindered because, you know, he had Tony Stark saving him a lot of the time. He had all this tech gear, and people wanted him to go back to his roots. We're now after No Way Home. It seems like, you know, obviously the world forgets who he is, and it's just going to be him and him as Spider-Man. And I think that has the opportunity to put Marvel in a realm of being able to be cinema, because he's not going to have anyone helping him. It's just going to be a true story of him wanting to be to help out the people of New York or wherever he is at, and, you know, the people repaying him for it, or, you know, hating him for it. Whereas a lot of the other movies, they're still trying to bring a lot of characters together, and I do like it when they do that, you know, having these cameos, but it can become a little too much at times, and sometimes characters, it's like, you're not showing your full ability because you're constantly being helped out by someone.
No, I did just think of one movie that is a Marvel movie that I would... I'm sure there's other ones that you could make the argument for, but I would say that the first Iron Man, I think you could classify that as cinema.
I agree. There is a 3, 4, or 5 movies in the MCU that you can qualify.
They kind of stand out. There's other ones that are kind of in a gray zone where... And just because something isn't cinema, we should make it clear, it doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, these movies are quality. It's just, they really should have a distinction to them, because it isn't the same thing as a Tarantino movie or a Wes Anderson movie.
It's not the same thing as watching No Country for Old Men.
Liam said it best earlier before we hopped on here. Marvel is a movie, whereas cinema is film.
Yeah,
and obviously that distinction sounds weird, but it really does.
I don't know if it's correct.
It just makes sense. If you really break it down, like film is a unique perspective on whatever the matter is, where it's unpredictable. You don't know what you're going to get from a movie, and you could walk out of the movie absolutely pissed. You're not going to really walk out of a Marvel movie angry. You're going to go, oh, that was a fun ride.
I think a lot of people could walk out of a Marvel movie angry, but especially after the first Avengers.
But that's the thing. It's not angry in a sense of, oh, that was bad. It was angry in a sense of not doing justice to the characters.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, you didn't do this from the novel. But
that's what makes a movie bad, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree. But holding it against it because, oh, you know, you didn't check all the boxes of what they wanted in the comics. It's like, well, first of all, you're adapting a screenplay. You're taking parts of it. You can't take everything or else. What, mm-hmm. Are you literally creating anything unique? You're just taking exactly what you are from the comics. But yeah, it is a tough distinction, and I don't disagree with the other side of them saying it's not cinema, or it is cinema, sorry, because, like, at the end of the day, a movie's a movie. You know, you're writing a script, and you got actors in it. Marvel's got a lot of great actors, but they are almost pigeonholed with their roles.
They so are. I'm sorry, but, like, a lot of the time, like, when I see, like, a Marvel actor outside of a Marvel movie... I don't know if they actually just can't act, or if I just, like, always have that role of them in my head, and I'm like, this is awful.
It's true. No, like, the other night, we watched Snowpiercer.
The only one I can get, okay, Chris Evans is, like, one of the only superheroes I can get out of my head, because I knew him as an actor before I knew him as Captain America.
Yeah, that's fair. But, like, he's one of those guys where it's like, you watch him as Captain America, and you're like, yeah, he's a solid actor. But then you see him in something like Snowpiercer, and you're like, oh my god, there's
this
levels.
Guy's great.
He's got range. There's levels to it. You see the same thing with Andrew Garfield. Like, people talk about him, oh, he's not a great Spider-Man. That was not his fault as an actor. Yeah. That was the poor dialogue. He's probably going to win the Oscar for Tick, Tick, Boom this year. He almost won one for Hacksaw Ridge. These are phenomenal actors that are being pigeonholed in these roles, but, and held back.
I think a lot of them are being pigeonholed. Not all of them, though, because I think there are... I think this actually helps Scorsese's point to that they're not film, that the Marvel movies aren't film, because it's like, you have these tremendous actors like Andrew Garfield, Scarlett Johansson.
She's unreal.
Like, there are so many in this industry, but the fact that you have all these actors and actresses that have done, like, movies that Scorsese would call film, not an amusement park,
yeah,
and then he can't call the ones that they're in with Marvel, it shows that it's Marvel's fault and not the actors.
Yeah, no, it is. And, like, I think it comes with having a bit more free range. Like, you know, when Heath Ledger was doing The Joker, Christopher Nolan just went, okay, this is the basis of the scene. These are the notes you got to hit, but have fun with it. Whereas Marvel, it's like, this is the script. This is the outcome. You can make a couple jokes if you want, but don't steer clear of what we've written.
I think that also goes into the directors as well. There's not many directors now that have the clout where they could go to a studio and say, hey, I'm not listening to your notes.
Yeah.
It's really like Tarantino can do it.
Nolan.
Maybe like Wes Anderson. There's a few David directors Fincher. Where they have
the background. I think someone that we'll see that has the potential to do it in the future is Jordan Peele.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's already doing it.
But then there's a lot of these directors where, like, if you were to... I don't know who directed Ant-Man, but I would imagine if you were to look at him, I probably don't know... I wouldn't know his name.
Mm-hmm. Or
hers. I would imagine... Or her name.
Yeah.
Sorry. But it would be, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't really have much say in how the movie went. Like, if the if Disney went to him and said, here's all the beats you're going to hit, and he said, oh, can I do this? And they said, no, that doesn't fit in with our plan for Phase 6.
Yeah.
It feels like, I don't know, James Gunn maybe has the most say out of any of the directors there in terms of his movies, just because nobody else can seem to really write the Guardians that well.
Yeah.
But anyone else, even him, it feels like Disney has like they have their fingers in everything.
Yeah, they're pushing an agenda.
Which like, kudos to them, it's worked. But that could be the downfall of them as well, is you're taking these creative filmakers and saying, like...
It's no longer creative.
But I think they are. Like, the filmmakers are creative.
The filmmakers they definitely are, but they're a lot of the time they're monotoning. Like,
but that's the thing. But that's I don't think I it's necessarily their fault. That they're taking these creative filmmakers and they're saying, make this product.
Yeah.
They're not saying, hey, make this art. They're saying, make this product for us. And then the filmmaker says, okay, but, like, his heart's not going to be fully in it. And so... Over time, when they start to feel samey, and you're like, well, they're all different directors. Why do they feel the same? It's like, well, it's because there's a big studio, and it's got to be safe. But that it could be what they need down the line is to say, let's have less structure.
Yeah.
Let's let the directors have a little free reign, because then the movies will start to feel distinct, and the directors, if you get good ones, which they can, they've got the money, they'll get good directors, and it'll make the actors better. Because... I would imagine people don't like Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. That has a lot to do with writing, a lot to do with directing.
Oh, yeah.
Because if he does a bad take, it's the director's job to say, that's not what we wanted. Do it this way.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield's proven he can act. A lot of these actors, if you're in a Marvel movie, you can probably act.
Yeah.
So if one turns out not great, like you guys have said, it's on the writing and the directing and all that.
And I think it is, you know, you brought it up, like Marvel pushing an agenda. You look back at Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy with Tobey Maguire. You get to that third movie, and the first two were great. Probably the best Marvel movies of its time. And you get to the third one, and his plan was to have, obviously, James Franco as Harry Osborn be one of the villains, and then you got Sandman. That right there is a phenomenal movie, because both of them are you know, characters with a dilemma of Sandman. He's not an inherently bad guy. He just made a couple bad choices, and he's doing it for the love of his daughter. And then you got Harry, who's like, you know, he hates Tobey because he thinks that he killed his dad. Whereas, you know, it was him going after him. That I can see as cinema. And then you get to Spider-Man 3, and then the studio's going, no, but we want Venom in it too. Let's make a third villain. And Sam Raimi's going, that's literally going to screw up the entire movie. And they're like, no, that's what we're doing.
Yeah,
see, they take the power away from the director.
Yeah, but a lot of the time, like, they've been messing up a lot of that as of late, especially with Adam. Adam can talk more to this, but we might have to talk about it next week, considering our time.
Yeah.
But... with the Matrix films and Warner Bros., the most recent one, and how they were kind of forced into doing it, even though the original creators did not want to.
And they kind of just made it into a joke, which is, I think that's great.
I think it's good on, I think it it's is good on their them part. For making it a joke, but, like, the fact that they lost their creative ability and didn't really want to make it in the first place.
Yeah. And that's how you see, like, the Star Wars sequel trilogy. This is exactly what happened to it. It's... Kathleen Kennedy and Disney are saying, hey, you can't do this. We want you to do this. You have to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's going to inherently ruin the movie. And the
writers
are going...
We have to have an AT-AT.
Exactly. And the writers
are
going,
what about Chewbacca?
Yeah. And so because you are pushing these themes, it's like, okay, well, now I got to do something crazy to get these people to enjoy it. So you bring Palpatine back for some dumb reason. You let Luke die. You have Leia show her powers, even though she's never had any powers in any of Star Wars. It's like...
And then you make 23 TV shows.
Yeah. And then original six movies of Star Wars were about Anakin Skywalker, and then you have his voice mentioned once in the entire trilogy. It's like they have a plan to an extent, but it's like when their agenda trumps the plan at the end of the day. And that's why, you know,
that's why Anakin is the next character that will be added to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Get ready for it, folks. You heard it here first. It's a good first episode in the books, I think.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
But yeah, guys, it was a blast to be here. We'll be doing bi-weekly episodes, and next week I think we might kind of continue with the Marvel subject of, do we think it is dying down, and, you know, will it go away. But at the same time, I think we'll also bring up some of our Oscar predictions as the nominees did just come out.
Oh, that's right.
And break into it. And maybe give our takes on as to how the Oscars can improve. But thank you so much for listening to Hollywood's Burning, the inaugural episode. Once again, I'm Riley Keenan. With me,
I'm Liam McDonald.
And I'm Adam Hostetler.
And we'll see you guys very soon.